Cable.
Oh, it's, oh, this is the telephone one. I'm, that's right, okay. I wasn't certain, but I vaguely remember that. So you've done all the magic? So there's somebody that's listening to us. Could that person speak up?
Yes, this is Chris Gill.
Wow, the wonders. Okay, hi, Chris. Well, I'm going to call the first case. This is Judge Higginson. I'm here with Judge Willett and Judge Engelhardt. We have three cases. The first one is yours, Chris, and it's 24-20457, Benavides versus Harris County. Ms. Jones. And you're here in person. Okay. It's a little. Anytime you're ready.
May it please the court, my name is Veronica Jones and I represent Harris County, the appellant in this case. Justices, the district court erred in this case by denying Harris County's summary judgment because there's no material fact issue in dispute as to Harris County's immunity in this case. Harris County is entitled to summary judgment, and this court should reverse and render in favor of Harris County because its governmental immunity has not been waived under the Texas Tort Claims Act. Justices, the only claim before this court against Harris County today is the Texas Tort Claims Act claim for negligence arising out of a shooting where Deputy Nunez shot Benavides while responding to and investigating a home invasion. Benavides alleges Deputy Nunez shot him and alleges an assault and excessive force under 1983. Additionally, Benavides also alleges a negligence claim against Harris County under the Texas Tort Claims Act regarding the exact same shooting. All of the relevant facts in this case for the injury-causing action arise out of the exact same conduct and incident. So under the Texas Tort Claims Act, or TTCA, there is a limited waiver of immunity. However, there's no waiver of immunity when there's an intentional tort asserted. So in this case, justices, it's not about a fact issue at all, but it's about a misapplication of law in which the lower court erred.
I thought there were considerable disputes over what happened.
Well, regardless of that, it's important to look at the immunity issue and look at what Texas courts state when looking at TTCA claims. So in order to plead this properly, like in this instance, Your Honor, Benavides can't have it both ways. So regardless of any alleged fact issue, we don't look at that. We look at what's pled and what Benavides states in his pleading. So he can't have it both ways in his pleading. He can't plead both an intentional act under the 1983 claim and then later under the same facts arising under that, then state, oh, I have a negligence claim for Harris County that waived.
Why if discovery came about where Nunez does say it was actually accidental? Why, in other words, Benavides isn't pleading around immunity. He's just responding to the revised facts in the case.
Well, when we look at other cases like other cases like this court has spoke about, like Science versus City of El Paso, the court basically says we look at certain things in the pleading. And the court looked at certain things in the pleading. In the Science case, he had alleged, hey, the deputy shot me and killed this person, right? And in addition to that, it also stated that the court looked at the fact that in the pleading, it stated that the shooting was excessive force. And so in looking at that case and turning it to the facts of this case, additionally, you can't do that. I mean, looking at the Texas Supreme Court cases in Peta as well as in Watonga as well, it holds that same proposition. So all of the cases that came after Watonga, that came after specifically Watonga, and that this court reiterated over and over in the Science case, in the Goodman case, and I think even as recently as...
But even if your point is just we have to assess it legally, isn't the majority of the constellation of allegations a tragic accidental discharge? In other words, not intentional. Almost everything that's being said is it was an emergency arrival at night, truck in the front yard, got to get in the door, switches the hand, and the gun fires. That sounds like a negligence case.
It may be. However, the pleading standard is clear, and I think the case law is clear on that. So when we're looking at Benavidez, his second amended complaint in the record, mm-hmm. and we look at on 249, the fact section on 249 going into 250, he uses those same fact sections to assert claims for not only his 1983 claim, but also into his negligence claim. And so he states at 249, Nunez fired at Mr. Benavidez, striking him in the leg. Looking at the Saenz case, again, the court said, he stated, the deputy pulled out his pistol, shot, and killed him, very similarly. In Benavidez, he also contends later on at 250, as a result of him being shot, Mr. Benavidez was hospitalized.
We have a video in this case, don't we?
We do.
Body cam. As I recall, there's several questions about what exactly the deputy was doing, whether the gun accidentally discharged, whether he was changing from one hand to the other, whether he intentionally shot but didn't know that the victim was a permittee, the father of the woman who made the 911 call. There are several factual issues, and they vary between an intentional act, an excessive force application, and negligence. The plaintiff in this case can't plead that in the alternative?
No. And if we look at a case from its last year, I believe Justice Higginson was on this one, this panel, Acosta versus Williamson County. This is a case where Acosta had alleged, well, in this case, Acosta was at the county jail and alleged a detention officer slammed the jail cell door on his finger. And there was video evidence in that case that the court stated it's unclear what's going on here, right? However, in the pleading in that case, Acosta pled an intentional tort against the employee and the intentional tort of excessive force for slamming that jail cell on the finger. And in addition to that, Acosta also asserted negligence claims under the TTCA, claiming that it was negligent as well, that action was by the employee was negligent as well. However, the court stated, you know, you can't have a negligence claim that arises out of the exact same conduct of the intentional tort claim that's asserted. And so in that case, it's similar to this case. I understand the questions about the fact issue, but that is not pertinent to what we're arguing and what the issue is here. At the end of the day, the negligence claim is barred by the intentional tort bar under the TTCA. You can't have it both ways when it comes out of the same conduct of the excessive force that's happened here. So the court has, or this court has looked at multiple cases and consistently held that standard in multiple cases. We look at Aguirre versus City of San Antonio, Pena versus City of Rio Grande City, Goodman versus Harris County. I mean, there's a plethora of cases where at the end of the day, the court states and continues to hold there's an intentional tort bar to those negligence claims that arise out of the same conduct. And I think it's important to also look at the record site at 251, where the plaintiff pleads specifically, plaintiff therefore pleads that he was unlawfully assaulted when he was shot by Nunez. Said actions resulted directly and only from the use of force that was clearly excessive to the need and the excessiveness of which was objectively unreasonable. And the fact that he pled that, looking at the Saenz case and what that court talked about, that court said, hey, you cannot, you know, state that the accidental act or the negligence claim comes from an intentional tort like excess, you know, arising out of excessive force, like a shooting. So it's very similar in that regard. So I would just liken it to that. So the negligence claim against Harris County does arise out of the exact same conduct that formed that intentional tort against Deputy Nunez, which is the shooting. So because of that, we just ask that the court follow that Texas court law out of Watonga, I don't think I'm pronouncing it correctly, I'm sorry, out of that case, Gordon, as well as out of PETA, and see all the additional cases that this court has followed since. Another case that this court has recently ruled upon was Salinas versus City of Houston, set 138 Federal 4th, 822 from 2025. And in that case, a surviving spouse filed a 1983 claim for excessive force because an officer shot her husband and killed him, but also at the same time a negligence claim against the county asserting that the officer used weapons negligently. Similar to this case, how Mr. Benavidez is stating that the officer negligently used his weapon. And this court stated that at the end of the day, that negligence claim asserted under the TTCA still arose out of that intentional action of excessive force under 1983. And so because of that, the intentional tort bar excluded that negligence claim. Any questions at this point?
No, you've saved time for rebuttal.
I'll save time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Your Honors, may I begin?
Yes, you may.
When we're talking about gymnastics, legal gymnastics, that's what we seem to be doing in this case. I mean, I think it's pretty apparent from the pleadings that we had presented forward is that the county and Nunez keep flip-flopping, for lack of a better term, in regards to whether this is an intentional act or a negligent one. And that's exactly where we find ourselves. This is not a court. This is not a first impression case in regards to this particular issue. There's various cases involving this court that have been decided, one of which was the Hucker case, but that was out of the Eastern District. But more importantly, this court found the exact same circumstances in the case of Lopez Rodriguez versus the City of Loveland. That was in 2004, and the reason I know that case very well is that I presented it to this court in regards to this very issue. And in that case, the Fifth Circuit obviously said that there was no impediment to a proper characterization of negligence when the facts may show what the officers in the course and scope of their duty were improperly or negligently used tangible personal property and caused the death. And in the Lopez-Rodriguez case, the defendants were doing exactly the same thing as the county and Nunez are doing in this case, which is asserting sort of after the fact that it was an accident. That was not all of the indications in regards to the initial pleadings that we put forward. We put forward the 1983 case, but looking into my crystal ball and kind of knowing and foreshadowing what would happen in the future, we also levied the alternative claim under the Texas Tort Claims Act. Initially, the district court rejected that claim and dismissed it, but after finding the statements of Nunez, where he in fact is stating that it was an accident, we asked for the permission to have that added back in, which it was approved, and so that's where we were on that. So I'm just, Rule 8 and the case law indicate, and I understand in most of the cases that they're citing, the Watauga case and things of that nature, the Sines case. Sines was one where someone who was twitching had attacked some people. He was unarmed, cuffed, and was of had no ability to do anything, and they shot him. Well, that was properly a 1983 case. That was an intentional act, and there was no assertion by anybody in the case or any of these other cases that somebody had accidentally done it. But in the cases where there is a distinct set of facts that could be, and I think counsel just admitted a minute ago before you that, yeah, it could be. Well, if it can be, and if they can believe one party or the other, and the video is not conclusive, which in this case it's not, then what we've got is a pure fact issue. And so the plaintiff does not have to rely upon one only to lose on the other, or to pick the other and to lose on the one. So that's what we have done in the regards to this case. Benavidez's pleadings have laid out specific facts, including for intentional acts, and then based on the defendant's own assertions, an alternative pleading under Rule 8 for the Texas Tort Claims Act. So I don't think there's really any issue there to be discussed, but we would ask that you obviously deny it on those grounds. Obviously, I have filed a motion for a plea to the jurisdiction, I suppose, or an objection to jurisdiction of the court in regards to this case. In regards to this, I'd like you to consider that at some point. If it's during this, that's fine. Now, going on, if it's okay with the court, I'd like to discuss the Texas Tort Claims Act itself. Counsel didn't really address anything in regards to that, and by their reply brief, I'm kind of seeing that they have dismissed or they're withdrawing their pleadings in regards to the ownership issue in regards to the ownership of the gun. Now, I don't know if they're also applying that to the authority to use, but I think that the case law is extremely clear that in regards to this case, there's not really an issue in regards to ownership or the authorization or use of the weapon in issue. I think the only thing comes down to it is whether this is a discretionary act and or in regards to whether it was in good faith, if that applies. I had laid out some discussion in regards to whether or not the DeWitt case under the Texas Supreme Court which should be really effective in regards to changing the statute in regards to the Texas Tort Claims Act. But I don't think we really need to get there in regards to that today. You know, carrying a gun itself is a ministerial act. It is not discretionary. The cases such as Signs and the others cited by counsel.
What's your, on both issues, I have a few questions. This is Judge Higginson. When you say carrying a gun is ministerial, I'm not really understanding that because the circumstances facing Nunez was the 911 call. So I do think that's an emergency. At night, sees a truck in the lawn, and he's got to enter the house. Where in any of that is ministerial actions? Those seem to be highly discretionary. How do you get into a house where there seems to be a home invader and the caller said that she's hiding somewhere? Where's any ministerial act in that sequence?
Well, I think, first of all, you got to look into the perspective that he really didn't have authorization to enter the home. He was basically breaking and entering into this home.
No, I'm just asking you to focus on what, when you say it's not, what he did wasn't discretionary. Describe the action he took that was purely ministerial, and then give me case authority that stands for that statement.
In regards to the weapon itself, I would put it akin to the bus situation or the driving situation. Typically, being in a car or driving.
Okay. I'm not interrupting out of sort of hostility, but do you have a case where mishandling a gun is somehow not discretionary? So without turning to buses, as I understand it, Nunez is trying to open a door, so he has to put the gun in the other hand. What case gets even close to that as just being ministerial as opposed to highly discretionary decisions made in a nighttime emergency?
I think you're looking at, well, you're obviously looking under Texas law, but you're looking at the Woods versus Moody case that we had cited to in our brief and the Burgess versus Jaramillo case out of Fort Worth and the other one out of Houston. But they're talking about, you know, just because there is some discretion. And when you're firing a weapon, I agree. If you're intentionally firing a weapon, then you're have a discretionary decision to make at that point. The problem with this is twofold, is that that's when you're firing the weapon. But if you're carrying a weapon, which you're obviously, you have to carry, and if you're, you know, if you could see me, I'm spinning my weapon on my hand, just walking around, then that would be a Texas Tort Claims Act case if you negligently shot somebody because you were spinning it like Billy the Kid. That is a ministerial act. That was not a discretionary act, meaning that because you have a weapon and you pick up the weapon, that anything you do after that fact becomes, it's discretionary in nature, and therefore you can escape liability.
Doesn't the video show that the difficulty was how he should turn the doorknob and still brandish his firearm?
I mean, the video, to me, seems fairly... I mean, it seems clear to me as to what happened. I mean, and it seemed like a 1983 intentional act. But there is a fact issue in regards to it because he's saying that he didn't mean to do that. And he should not have been, one, he should not have been opening the door. That was not a discretionary act to break into this residence without any kind of warning whatsoever.
So in an emergency home invasion situation, whether you knock and wait is not in an officer's discretion. They have to knock and wait. They can't go inside. To help.
If they had exigent circumstances, then I think the answer might be different. But in this case, Dr. Nunez, during his deposition, admitted that there were absolutely no exigent circumstances that would allow him to go into that door.
Remind me, you know the record better, but isn't it sort of like Uvalde? In other words, you've got a woman saying she's hiding inside and there's an intruder. That's not an exigency for any police officer, even alone, first arrival, to go in.
I think it depends. It may depend on the circumstances, but in this case where Nunez states that he did not have any exigent circumstances, in other words, either objectively or subjectively, did he have any reason to go in there? He had none. So I understand the court's point, but in regards to this case, he simply didn't have any exigent circumstances, not even arguably, and he admittedly says that he didn't. So that's the premise you're starting with, is that is it okay for him to go in? He had no reason to have his gun brandished. He had no person of interest. He wasn't going in for an arrest. He wasn't doing anything of that nature. He was just going to try to catch him off guard, whoever that was.
Am I right that in many ways, the moving to good faith, the argument there, too, at least the way you briefed it, depends on us agreeing there was no emergency? Because when I looked at your argument, it's really at pages 31, 32. It's the last half of the last paragraph. And I'm not being comical, but you cite Hamlet, but you don't cite any authority, legal authority, for the proposition that we wouldn't apply City of Fort Worth Robinson Telhorster.
Well, in regards to Telhorster, obviously that deals with an arrest case, but this is not an arrest. This is, at best, and even the county says this was an emergency. So you would have to go through the elements in regards to the Worcester test, you know, whether it was a serious crime, the necessity, the alternatives, you know.
I thought you were just saying, though, this isn't an emergency.
I don't believe that it's an emergency, but even if you believe that it was.
But if it's not an emergency, aren't we in the world of Telhorster?
I don't think so. I think that if you're not in the realm of an arrest, and you're not in the realm of some sort of exigent circumstance that requires some sort of emergency, then you're just in a normal good faith analysis. And as far as a good faith analysis, you've got to go through the issues in regards to the seriousness of the crime and necessity for any kind of seizure or otherwise. Now, it's interesting that the county cites in their reply brief, they cite to Holland versus the City of Houston, and they cite to that on this specific point, and saying that you have to find that it was good faith belief because it was during the time that it was a discretionary act when he was killed. But the court in that case concluded that even if the issue of good faith surrounded whether, in fact, Holland was armed or unarmed, and therefore they would have been unable to make a decision, only a jury could, they would be precluded from making a determination on the availability of the official immunity in that case. Now, derivative immunity applied in that. It doesn't apply in this case, but that's what they eventually found. But they found that it would be up to the jury to make a decision in regards to the application of official immunity, because it would make a decision in regards to what had transpired and what he thought was at the scene. And that's the curious thing. We're trying to put a square peg in a round hole, because they're utilizing concepts that deal with discretionary duty and making decisions, but they're not alleging that he made a decision to shoot in this case. They're alleging that he accidentally fired. Now, granted, at some points they were alleging that it was intentional, but now they're backtracking in regards to that. So I think at the end of the day, as I stated in the brief, is that even if we were to do these gymnastics in regards to the good faith analysis and the official immunity and the application to the county, I think at the end you still have you need to have a fact finder in regards to the what was presented to him at the time. And that goes back to the objection to the jurisdiction. Because in regards to the jurisdiction in the case, you only have jurisdiction if it turns on an issue of law. And that's not what we have in this case. We have a multitude of facts, a plethora of facts, however you want to describe it. But that's where we are.
So you're good. There are issues of fact as to Nunez's good faith because you would apply the Wade-Witz test, and therefore there are issues of fact going to the risk aspect? Is that your argument?
Yes, I believe so, Your Honor.
You can continue. We don't have eye contact, so I didn't have another question.
Well, I think that I've kind of covered, I don't know in their rebuttal what they're going to discuss in regards to the Tort Claims Act, but I think in looking at that, I think I've laid out the majority of the Wolowitz case in there for the good faith standard that applies. So even if we agree that it is an emergency situation, as the county espouses, then Wolowitz would apply, and Torsh-Horter would not. And so based on that, we would ask that you deny, whether on the merits and or grant my motion to dismiss for lack of jurisdiction at this point, or send it back to the district court, who obviously put some good effort into making a determination in regards to the factual disputes in regards to this case and whether they apply to the 1983 for Nunez or they apply to the Texas Tort Claims Act. Either way you come around, and even looking at the Holland case cited by the county itself, you have fact issues that need to be resolved.
Thank you, counsel. We have rebuttal.
Just briefly, justices, I just want to, I guess, push the argument back to what I think is the dispositive issue here, which is the jurisdictional immunity here under the TTCA. And the issue, the issue of negligence versus the intentional tort isn't material here. It is that Benavidez can allege that negligence claim where he also asserts that same conduct arises from that intentional tort. And I also wanted to briefly address the Lopez case that opposing counsel cited that he was on. This was decided well before City of Watonga versus Gordon. And that case, that Texas Supreme Court case, has been the instructive case that this court has adhered to since it came out. The Lopez case was well before and wasn't, you know, City of Watonga wasn't even there yet for this case to be, for this court to be instructed upon that issue fully. So I did want to point that out. And every case I've seen from City of Watonga versus Gordon from this court since, a lot of those cases I've named, all are instructive and show that negligence cannot arise from the intentional act. And then just very briefly, I don't think we even need to get to the official immunity argument in this case, given this court's, given what the court's case law. But if need be, I do think it's a discretionary act that occurred as far as Deputy Nunez having to determine to even respond to this, how he's investigating this case once he gets there, the fact that he even pulled out his weapon. And I think it's very clear it's not a ministerial act, which is typically something the courts has determined are like orders that are given to a deputy to play out. And that's not what we have in this case. This was definitely a discretionary act. And then as far as the good faith is concerned, I think looking at the case I cited in my brief, City of Fort Worth versus Robinson, that case I believe would be instructive in determining good faith here. That case, I think, in many ways is similar to our case here, or could be deemed similar to our case here in certain ways. And I think the important part about good faith is we have to argue, or the county has to argue that a reasonably prudent officer could have believed it necessary to engage in the same conduct. And once that is established, it's up to Benavidez. He's required to offer evidence that no reasonable officer in Nunez's position could have believed the facts justified the conduct, and he's just not done that. And then
that's assuming that we accept that Telhorster applies. So we'd have to extend an arrest situation, which is pretty different than a stealthy entrance at night.
That is true, but the city of
Fort isn't a stealthy entrance. I'm just thinking, sorry to interrupt, but stealthy entrance seems much more like the high speed calculation. In other words, officers really have to be assessing public risk exactly for the reasons of what happened here. There's an innocent father on the other side of the door who's shot dead. But whereas an arrest, you've got control of the situation. So it makes sense that Texas law has evolved to say we don't look at risk. It's a controlled situation. This is much more like a high-speed case. But you disagree. Is there case law that extends arrest to emergency home entries?
Well, I didn't see that. Yeah. However, I do think the City of Fort Worth versus Robinson to me is more similar to that. This wasn't necessarily an arrest. They were investigating someone in a vehicle, and told, you know, gave him commands. And so it wasn't technically an arrest either. And the court still extended the tell hoister standard in that case. So in my mind, it's more similar to that, and the court still extended that there. And just very briefly, as far as any jurisdictional issue that's been raised in this case, as far as that's concerned, this court has held in many instances that because the Texas Tort Claims Act is immunity-based, that this court would have jurisdiction to hear any appeal if it's in federal court and appeal therefrom. So I would just point that out.
Wonderful.
Any other questions,
no?
Your Honor?
Thank you both.
Thank
the
you.
Case is submitted. We'll hear the next case of our day, 24-10644, U.S. versus Kirshner.